Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share, and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Griefsters. Hope you're having an okay week. Thank you so much for joining me. I hugely appreciate that you download this podcast and listen to it every week. It is just, yeah, it's so nice. Thank you so much. We've been doing a bit of a mini-series, I don't know if you've noticed. I didn't really tell anyone because I forgot to mention it. But the last 2 weeks I've been talking to people who are sort of in the death industry, and we'll be doing the same this week with Zoe Clark-Coates from Saying Goodbye. But yeah, I just wanted to provide, I guess, 3 episodes in a row. In the summer, perhaps when, I don't know, maybe sometimes it's hard when the world is on holiday and perhaps you're not feeling it, so that if you haven't listened to the other 2 episodes, I can't recommend them enough. Dr. Catherine Mannix and Anna Lyons, who is a death doula, just talking about different aspects of grief and working with people who are dying. They've been some incredible feedback from those episodes, so I'm really glad that we decided to do it, because as you know, I normally speak to comedians about this sort of thing, so it's nice to just occasionally have a break. Just that you know as well, I'm going to be on a break myself for 2 weeks after this episode, only 2 weeks, so fear not, there are plenty of episodes. Go back and listen to the ones that you haven't listened to yet, the people that you don't know, it's always worth it. So yeah, we'll be back on the 4th of September, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode, and if on that 2 week break you want to rate and review us, that would obviously be hugely appreciated. This week I'm talking to Zoe Clark-Coates, who is the founder of the Mariposa Trust, which incorporates Saying Goodbye, which is a baby loss charity. Zoe is an incredible woman who has turned her own grief and personal pain into, yeah, an incredible institution, which I actually first heard of on the Lou Conran episode, because she was raising money for them after they had helped her. If you are interested in episodes on baby loss, Lou's is a really wonderful and poignant one as well. Zoe came in to talk to me about the 5 baby losses that she's experienced, her work with Saying Goodbye, and of course she has a new book coming out as well, The Baby Loss Guide, which we'll give more details at the end. Here she is.
Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with Zoe Clark-Coates, who is the CEO of the Mariposa Trust, but also an author, a TV host, a government advisor.
Mm-hmm.
Is that everything? Did I get that right?
Yeah, kind of.
People might know you as well, if they don't know the Mariposa Trust, from Saying Goodbye. So Saying Goodbye is part...
of the Mariposa Trust.
And it's Mariposa Trust is a charity.
Yes. So Mariposa Trust, or Mariposa International, is the primary charity. And then we have got many different divisions. Saying Goodbye is the leading division for offering all support for anyone who loses a baby.
Right. Okay. Mm. And when did you set up?
The charity.
The charity, yeah.
About 6.5 years ago now.
Oh, okay, so it's still quite recent, really.
Really recent.
Wow.
We became one of the leading charities within 6 weeks. So
we weren't. Think there was a massive gap?
For sure.
Yeah.
And I think because we were supporting everybody, whatever stage of loss, whether it be early in miscarriage, stillbirth, or right the way up to 4 years of age, we filled this gap of offering equal support, and for both men and women, and whether the loss was recent or historic. So we support as many people who have lost babies 60 years ago as people who have lost babies last week.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, when something really kicks off, it's often because it was not there.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are like, oh my God, yes, we need someone to talk to.
For sure.
So what inspired you to start the Mariposa Trust? What was it within your story personally?
Yeah, well, sadly, we lost 5 babies ourselves.
Wow.
Yeah, so we lost 3 babies before we went on to have our daughter, who's now 10. And then we lost another 2 babies before having our next little girl, who is now 7.
Wow.
So we'd been through it, and we...
Did you lose them at different stages?
Or? Yeah, we did. And our first loss was a miscarriage. Mm. Our second loss was a missed miscarriage. So we'd been going for loads of scans. Everything had been fine. We'd seen our little girl developing away. And then one day we went for a scan and her heart had just stopped beating. And there was no reason given to us. It was just one of those things.
How many weeks were you then?
We don't really talk about the stage of loss. And that was deliberate because so many people write off losses as being a medical incident.
Yeah.
And we were really passionate, specifically when we launched the charity, but still are today, the fact that all loss matters, however early or late. So we never go into gestation, really, just because it's that message for other people that your baby matters, whatever point you lose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I suppose that's my obsession with linear narrative. I like to know where, like where you would have been kind of thing in the chain. But you're right. And I think that's really... I've seen that on some of your publicity. It's really interesting. Like, it doesn't matter if it was, you know, just one pregnancy test. You were pregnant, you were a mother.
Absolutely. Yeah. The moment you see those lines on the pregnancy test, that's where all your dreams and hopes start. And you start thinking about names and what they're going to look like, etc. And so, for me, it's really important to hammer that home to everybody, the fact that a baby is a baby. And if you're grieving, you're grieving. And you don't deserve to have longer to grieve if it's at a certain gestation than another.
And we've talked about that so much on the show, of like the hierarchy of grief. Mm-hmm. And Anna Whitehouse, Mother Pucker. So she did an episode and we were talking about that on hers, of how, you know, it doesn't matter. I've had people be... I think maybe more bereft from the loss of a grandparent than perhaps I have been from a parent. Like, it doesn't matter what situation it is, it's just how you feel.
Absolutely.
And I think that must be really important, because I guess, do you have people who feel like they're not allowed to grieve because it was only 2 weeks and the rest of the world is telling them, oh, well, these things happen, you know.
For sure. And I think the whole dialogue around loss is, well, 1 in 4 babies gets lost in pregnancy. And while that's nice to know in terms of knowing you're not alone and you're not the only person it's happening to, it's also devastating to know that so many people are going through that much loss. But it's also, I think, become a way of writing off people's grief. Well, this happens to 1 in 4, so what can you expect? And actually, that doesn't help. It just is a knife to the heart to grieving parents when, it might be quite common, but actually my world's just shattered.
That's what we were talking about on Anna's episode, because I remember when that statistic started being used. And I think the reason it's used came from a good place of like normalizing it. It's common, it happens, we should be talking about it.
Yeah.
But then you know, as ever, there's consequences to things, and it's not, some are negative, some are positive. And one of the consequences of that is that it becomes like, oh, it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's almost weird that you
haven't had one. Like,
yes.
Well, okay, like, you're just bound to have one, so let's not talk, you know. It's just like having a stubbed toe.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and it's just really weird that this loss gets written off in that way. And you would never think of saying to somebody who's got cancer, for instance, yeah. where it's one in three or one in four, well, what do you expect? One in three people get it.
Yeah, but actually,
when it comes to baby loss, that's said to parents all the time.
Although, people do say that. People do say to people with cancer. They do. Yeah, it's quite weird. It's funny with statistics, isn't it? Because they can be so helpful and so harmful. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really important. It's important to have them. It's just how you use them. For example, when my dad died of pancreatic cancer, I thought it was a very strange, rare disease. And I felt quite isolated by that. And then as I did this show and I got in touch with PCRF and PCUK, and they started telling me, no, like, it's the fifth biggest cancer killer. And it's actually quite common. And that weirdly made me feel like, oh, he didn't have this very strange thing. I'm actually quite normal. So that's an example of, like, really great use of statistics, guys. Yeah. But, like, yeah, I can understand that if, you know, you've lost a baby early, inverted commas early, then... And some just, I think, ever being told to get over something is just not you. If you feel sad, you feel sad. That's the end of the conversation.
For sure. And when you're going through baby loss as well, you're grieving the fact that, will I ever end up with a baby in my arms too? Because you never know whether you're going to.
And you've got to start the process all over again.
Yeah, and it just because you've been able to conceive once doesn't mean you'll be able to conceive again. So you're constantly grieving that as well.
Yeah.
For us, losing three before having a child to raise, that was just truly devastating, in thinking maybe we'll never be parents in a way that our friends were parents. Maybe we won't have a child to celebrate Christmas with, etc. And so you're grieving all of that at the same time as grieving the children you've lost.
It must have been so hard after you, well, the whole thing must be hard, but after you had your first daughter and then to have two losses again, that must have felt very like... Oh God, here we go again.
Yeah. You know, and ironically, after having our daughter Esme, I just presumed we wouldn't go through loss again, even though we'd lost three before her.
Wow,
it was like, now we've brought one home.
Yeah.
Our history with loss is done.
Yeah, we know what we're doing now.
Yeah. And so nothing's going to happen again. So when it happened all over again, the trap door opened and we fell yet again.
Yeah.
Nothing could have prepared us for it. And it was exactly the same as with our little girl Darcy, this loss was. It was a little boy, Samuel. And again, we'd been going for multiple scans. Everything had been going great. We'd been watching him growing. And then again, we were told his heart had stopped. And back to square one yet again, but with a little girl watching on.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I decided to go into surgery, actually. All of the other losses I'd delivered or had natural miscarriage. But for that loss, we decided we needed to go into theatre just so she didn't witness as much trauma, if you like.
Wow. Mm. So the first three you either delivered or had natural miscarriage?
Yeah. And for me, that was just a natural choice. I didn't want to go into a hospital setting. Mm. I wanted to be in control somewhat. But we were not given any information. I had no idea when I agreed to do it, what I was agreeing to do.
Really?
And with Darcy, I was in for a full 24-hour of labour to deliver her. And I was not given any information. And that is one of the other areas of loss that's so terrifying, is the fact that you're not given any information. You're sort of sent out off in your own and just told good luck.
I think as well, we have this because we use the language, isn't it? Like we say, she lost a baby, or they had a miscarriage. Like, and if you don't know, you just sort of think, oh, I guess the pregnancy went away. Like, you don't know the ins and outs of it. I think especially if you've never had a period, it must be like, well, I don't know. If you're someone who has periods, you must think, well, what is the old sort of description? It's like, oh, it's a heavy period. It's like having a really heavy period. And the women I've spoken to who've been through it have gone, no, it's not like, it's not like,
no,
because it's labour.
It's labour and delivery.
And God, that is just.
And so when it just gets written off as a medical incident or as a heavy period, that's really demeaning to the people who are going through it.
And it's so traumatic.
It is truly traumatic.
So are you just at home?
You can either be in hospital or you can go through all of this at home in isolation with no information.
Oh, God.
So they say if you bleed too much, come into hospital.
What's too much? But what's too much? Knows, yeah.
Exactly. It's a million unknowns. And that just adds to the terror of it. So you're grieving what you're losing, but you're also scared to death the whole time yourself thinking, am I about to die here?
Yeah.
Because you have no idea how much blood is too much, how much pain is too much, etc. There's all of these unknown questions, which is one of the reasons that we launched the charity, was to be able to give people information as well as support and make people feel somewhat in control of a very uncontrollable situation.
Yeah, my God. I mean, it's the least that you'd hope is that you'd have some information.
Yeah.
Where is that coming from, that lack of information? Is it lack of resources, or is it just the way it's been talked about for years and years and years is like, oh, well, go home and come back in 2 days and don't tell anyone about it? Like,
I think it's a combination of everything. Mm. I think in terms of society, I think the 12-week rule has actually been a terrible thing for women because the 12-week rule tells you don't tell anybody you're pregnant until after that first scan, just in case you lose, which is actually a not so subtle message of saying don't tell anybody if you lose a baby.
Yeah, it's
so
funny,
it keeps people in silence and it gives people almost a shame of talking about it. And the amount of people I say, I shouldn't be telling you I'm pregnant because I haven't had my scan yet.
Yeah.
You're like, no, actually, you can. You have the freedom to tell people at any stage you want. But I think that's given society this not talking about it. And then in terms of medical resources, lack of resources definitely plays a part, lack of time. The fact that because loss is sadly so common, there's a lot of people going through the system who are going through the same thing, and there isn't the support available often within the NHS in terms of time to sit down with people.
You're
and
so
make sure
right.
Okay.
It's time.
It
and
is.
As we know, because they're under resourced and understaffed, they don't have the time to spend with everybody because there are so many people. That 12-week thing is fascinating. I didn't tell anyone until past the 12 weeks. And as someone with quite bad anxiety, I found it very relieving once I got past the 12 weeks. It gave me a fake, it's going to be sort of okay. It gave me something just to calm my nerves. But I remember someone emailing me about it. We've spoken about it on the show before. And they were like, oh, you shouldn't say, you should just say when you want to. And it's difficult because I was like, oh, I found it, it gave me a fake control, definitely a fake control that made me just feel like, okay, I'm not going to tell you till 12 weeks because in case something happens and then I feel a bit more somehow in control of it.
Absolutely. And it tells you the fact that loss shouldn't be discussed. Grief shouldn't be discussed.
Like there's no point telling anyone because, well, it might happen.
Yeah.
So,
but actually it's so hard to tell people the fact that you've gone through loss if they didn't know you were pregnant.
Yeah, oh God,
and
yeah, of course.
One of our big campaigns is just tell it.
Yeah.
Just tell your news, get it out there, because if the worst case happens, you need those people to rally around you.
Yeah.
You need support. And just like I just said, it's hard to tell people you've lost if they didn't know you were pregnant. I know I found it very hard. And so after going through loss, I told people straight away so people could rally around us.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I think the key is like, do what you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Like if you want to wait. And I found it very helpful to me because not just for anxiety, but it gave me 12 weeks to get my head around it.
Yeah.
So that's what I quite like, that by the time I was telling people, I was very okay. I was like, I know what I'm doing. So when people were like, oh my God, I was like, don't worry, I'm okay. Whereas I think if I'd done it at 2 weeks, but then that's still, I still very isolated. I had to get my head around it by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I had to. I felt like that was what was expected of me.
Yeah.
Was like, go away for 12 weeks in a cave.
Yeah.
Decide what the hell you're doing with your life and come back when you can present yourself to society. So you're right. It's a weird connotation, isn't it? And obviously you get things after 12 weeks as well.
Of course you do. I mean, so much loss. I mean, obviously the majority is happening before the 12-week period. But there's still a huge amount of loss after 250,000 losses every year in Britain. And so 700 babies will be lost today. That's a huge amount
that
of people suffering, often in silence.
And just feeling that they can't talk about it because it's normal, it's common. What you like? Yeah. It's like, I've got a cold. Yeah, great.
And told not to talk about it.
It's weird though, isn't it? Because when you go, people say I've got a cold. People say, I feel awful, I've got a cold, I'm very ill. Even though you'd be like, but if someone said that, your friend said that to you, you wouldn't be like, everyone gets cold, why are you telling? You'd be like, oh, I'm sorry to those. Okay, you know, I'm glad.
It's true.
Also, you can't work today, so you needed to tell me. And your brain is a bit slow. And, you know, if you're if you're pregnant, doesn't mean your brain's slow, but like if you're pregnant, you're going through something, and if you've lost the baby, then that stuff needs to change. I think sometimes about grief and death, sometimes, all the time. The problem is, what needs to change is so huge that I think society goes, oh God, that's too much. Really? Because when you say 700 babies, you're like, yeah, so today, those people, those parents will need more support. And I think sometimes the world or society or industry business goes, oh, and it's a bit like flexible working or, you know, this allowing parents to be people. Can seem very overwhelming. Like, oh, how would we do that? But it's actually like, we just have to. We just have to find a way.
And we're scared about being touched by it ourselves.
Oh, God, yeah.
Just like with cancer, which we've just touched on. It's the same thing, isn't it? People don't want to talk about things that they're fearful of.
And they do, I do think people feel like it's catching.
Yeah.
Like there's something about it that if I keep it away from me, then I won't get it.
Yeah.
And I know it's such an irrational fear, but I completely understand it. And when I've talked about my experiences of death or cancer, when people have both their parents, I know I can see sometimes they're like, oh God, get away. Oh God. Do you have that? Do you find some people like, oh God, please don't talk to me about your charity?
Wow. Actually, we always get a good response, but I was very scared about that. And I was scared about being defined as the woman who'd lost babies.
Yeah.
Especially when we're such spokespeople in this field now, the fact that I'd be kind of defined by it. But now I realise that's just something that your inner voice says to you to keep you quiet. Because actually, people don't feel like that at all. They look at you as somebody who's overcome stuff and is strong to be able to talk about it. So they don't look at you with pity. But I definitely worried about that. And I was really scared that I would be put into this box of that's who you are as a person. And actually, I realised the only people that can put you in that box is yourself.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I've, you know, the girl whose dad died is pretty much how I... and I think you're right. But I guess my interpretation of it is like, well, I am.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not
who you are.
It's not all who I am. It's definitely a massive part. I think for me, I spent years being like, I'm not the girl who said, I'm absolutely not. It's nothing to do with me. It has no consequence.
Yeah.
And then eventually I was like, it's huge. It's the biggest thing that ever happened to me. It's a massive part of my life.
Yeah. And it's something that shaped you.
Yeah, totally. And I suppose it's similar, like with the losses, you know, when you have a child and you go through that, you know, people say, oh, your life has changed and all these things. Mm-hmm. So when you've lost a child, your life has changed.
It is completely changed. It's completely changed. And my life is completely different today than it was pre-losing children.
Yeah, of course.
But what is amazing to me is that I'm happier today than I was before losing children because I've embraced life so much more.
Yeah.
I always say it's like I saw the world in black and white before and now I see it in colour.
Yeah.
Because everything is more real and more vibrant and I never take anything for granted. And I think that's part of being aware of this trapdoor that can open at any point and your life can change in an instant, that you just don't let things slip by anymore, that you embrace it all.
Mm.
With that also comes a fear, of course, the fact that you've also been aware that the world can change in an instant. So you've got both sides of that. When you're aware that that sliding door moment can happen and life will never be the same again, it definitely does spark a fear in you as well.
We talk about on the show all the time of death anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have it massively because my dad died quite suddenly. Yeah. So now I know that can happen.
Of course.
So, and I guess, especially with loss of children, you must have very, like, you know, it can happen.
Yeah.
But you're right. I really agree with that statement of like, it's like black and white then colour. Although I sometimes think it's a bit like Technicolour. Like sometimes it's like, whoa, it's bright. Like, it is bright. So everything is very heightened, which is, you do appreciate things, but also, it does, everything's turned up slightly because you can really see it.
Yeah.
And perhaps before, like, these doors that you don't need to open until you've wanted children or got pregnant and like, why do you need to think about it? You don't. It's not in your world and it doesn't affect your worries. But once you've gone through that door of, I want a child and I want a family, and then not being able to. What do you think about the control thing? Because I think the thing that I think is quite interesting is we have so much control in our lives,
mm-hmm.
especially now. And, you know, you can present whatever you want online, which is a bigger world as it is in real life.
Yeah.
You know, they are very equal. But when you do lose a baby, there's no There's no control, is there?
There isn't.
There's no, like you said, the heart just stopped beating. There was no reason for it.
And that's so scary.
Yeah.
And to know as a mother you couldn't do anything to save your child.
Oh, God, yeah.
And you're going through all of these things. Is it something I've done? And yeah. The doctors are saying it's nothing you've done. But actually, you just want to find a reason. And that's why so many people end up blaming themselves. Partly because it's a way of almost being in control of it still.
Yeah.
If you can actually identify something and say, this is why it happened, you can actually prevent it happening again. But as soon as you're told there is nothing that you did, actually, that means you can't do anything next time to stop it happening. So it's really hard to know that we have so little control over these massive, massive life events.
And how do you resolve that? How do you resolve that lack of control?
I don't think you do.
You don't.
I think you just take a deep breath and move forward.
Yeah.
And that's what's so scary, isn't it? The fact that we almost need to do that on most things in life.
Yeah.
But actually, when you've seen so much loss and death, it makes you cautious about taking a step forward.
Mm.
And that's part of what we do as a charity, is help people move forward in that, because it's so scary to do it alone. And we're not going to be able to remove that fear from them, because we can't promise them that everything will always be okay in the future.
Yeah.
If we did, we'd be lying. All we can say is we have no idea what the next step's going to look like for you, but we'll walk it with you.
I think that's all you can do, isn't it, when it comes to assisting people, is, like you said, you can't fix it.
No.
You can't offer a solution.
No.
But you can just say, I'll stand next to you.
Yeah.
And that lack of control, I mean, obviously, I don't want to compare, it's just they're hugely different situations, but obviously I can only speak from my experience.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was a very well person, he was very healthy, and then he got cancer and died very suddenly. And that was a huge thing for me, was like, but how, but why? Like, but why? How can that happen? And it's taken such a long time to go, it just did.
Yeah.
Because that is fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
If it just did, then anybody can die and anything can happen.
I know.
You know.
And you don't want to believe that.
No.
And I think that's why people are scared of talking about grief as well, is because if it happened to you, it might happen to me.
Yeah.
If you just lost your dad suddenly, then maybe I could.
Yeah.
And you're making them almost address things that they'd never want to look at.
No, nobody wants to look at these things at all.
But it's part of the circle of life.
Mm.
And the more comfortable we get talking about it, the more we can support one another.
Yeah, that's so true.
Where we say it takes a village to actually get through stuff, there's nothing more true than that when it comes to death, that we need those around us to be with us, to support us, to not make it better, but just to make us feel less lonely, because it's such an isolating experience.
It's so isolating. All grief is so isolating. And I think I say this a lot on interviews as well, but it's like, it's interesting because it's the one thing that's guaranteed.
Yeah.
Like, it's guaranteed that people are going to die. It's guaranteed that one will die. You will die. Sorry, Zoe. Make you feel bad this morning. It's guaranteed, Zoe.
Pass me the tissues.
I will die. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's such a weird thing, because we can't think that every day, otherwise we wouldn't survive. Like, that's why we don't. That's why part of our brain to survive goes, you don't need to think that today.
Mm.
If we were, you know, I'm always saying this and I'm not an anthropologist, but like, you know, millions of years ago, we needed to survive because we knew we were going to die. So I think that part of our brain that goes, like, just don't think about it, is really useful and important.
Yeah.
But we've like squashed it so much that now we're like, what do you mean I'm going to die? It's like, I mean, it's the only thing I can guarantee of everybody.
Yeah.
I can't guarantee anybody happiness or, you know, sadness or joy or wealth, anything, but I can guarantee you will die.
Yeah.
And yet here we all are going, what?
I know.
What? What
I
just
know.
Happened?
It's so true.
And like you said, we're just not practiced at talking about it.
No.
Which is, I do understand. I totally understand, you know, it's not wanting to feel pain. And I think, again, we're empathetic animals. So when someone says, oh, I lost those babies, you know, you feel like, oh, I feel for you. I feel that pain. And I think some people just don't like that.
They don't want to go there.
No.
And that's really hard. But it's even hard when you're trained to deal with it. I mean, I'd trained as a counsellor.
Oh, you did?
Fully, prior to going through any loss. My mum's a therapist, so that was my natural leaning. So I trained as myself, not intending to use it professionally. I just did it as a hobby almost, even though that was where my training and background was. And nothing, even that, didn't prepare me for going through baby loss, because actually, when you're walking through it, you forget everything you've ever been taught and you're just sitting there staring at the wall, and you want somebody to stare at the wall with you.
Yeah.
You don't really need anything more in those initial stages. than somebody just to go, you're going to survive this, you're going to survive this, because you're really doubting whether you can get out of bed the next day.
That's it, isn't it? You need someone to remind you. You somehow will get through this. And that's it. That really, I talk about this episode a lot, but Kaylee Llewellyn's episode, because she lost six members of her family.
Yeah,
I've
listened to that.
And that when she said that her best friend just came and stared at the wall with her. And that still for me is like, when people go, what can I do? You're like, just go and sit next to someone and stare at all of them. Like, that is it. So what does the Mariposa Trust do then? So it supports the families.
Yeah.
Do you offer advice as well? Like, what different aspects are you?
So we've got lots of different divisions.
Yeah,
saying goodbye.
It's huge.
So the support reaches over 50,000 people a week, which just shows you the scale of loss, really. Saying Goodbye offers befriending, national services of remembrance that we hold at cathedrals all around the world.
Yeah, talk about this, because I've heard about this and I think it's beautiful.
So the services are for people who have either had a funeral or not had a funeral, but they're a time for people to come together to say, my baby mattered and I've got the right to mourn and I'm going to stand alongside others that have gone through it. So again, people of every generation come.
Yeah.
So we have people who are in their 90s, who are standing next to people in their 20s, who have all gone through loss, who are visibly grieving. And it just shows you the fact that loss and grief journeys with you. It's not something that can just be parked or forgotten. It's something that changes you and you then learn to live with it. And these services are beautiful.
Are they in churches or?
Always at cathedrals, apart from in London, which happens at Westminster Central Hall. They happen at cathedrals all around the world. And they're just beautiful. We do something unique to Saying Goodbye services, which is handbell ringing as well. So the handbells go around the venue and people get to ring a bell for every baby they've lost. So you hear these chimes all over the cathedral ringing and you know that those babies have been given almost a voice, and parents stand together ringing those bells, and sometimes with the children, because the services are for the whole family, and it's just so beautiful.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
I think that's really interesting about the voice, like, because they must feel silent.
Yeah.
Because you're being asked to be silent.
Yeah.
And then that child never got to speak.
Yeah.
So there's something about, like, the lack of noise, which, again, like, as animals, you feel like, no, they did exist despite their silence.
And that's the hard bit about losing babies. You end up not just having space to grieve, you end up becoming a campaigner to say my baby mattered and my baby existed.
Because
the world's saying that they didn't exist if they didn't meet them, because if they died in utero, then they didn't exist in a lot of people's minds. And so you end up saying, no, my baby mattered, and campaigning for that, which actually can really hamper the grieving experience, because while you're having to scream about somebody's worth or value, it's very hard to be able to be allowed that space to just fully grieve and say my baby mattered, and you see that my baby mattered as well as me, and that's really healing.
Yeah, there's, I haven't actually read the book yet, but I know that Feathering the Empty Nest,
and
it's called Ask Me His Name,
yeah,
which when I saw that title, obviously Elle experienced baby loss, and I just thought, wow, it's that fucking simple, isn't it?
It is.
Because And it's an odd thing to compare, and it's only because it's, again, sorry, apologies, it's the only thing I can compare it to, but if I had to campaign to get you to validate my father before I could talk about mm-hmm. him, and if you didn't even ask me his name, you know, I would feel mad. I'd yeah. feel mad. I'd feel really like, I'm so upset he's dead, but I also have to be like, no, he mattered. Like, yeah. he was important to me, and like, he was 50%, I'm 50% of his genetic properties are from me, guys, so I think that's why it's important. Like, I can't imagine. It must be so fucking hard it for is. People just when people go, oh dear, oh well, you know, these things yeah. happen.
Like, go, try again.
Try again. Well, that's it. Mm-hmm. Keep going. You never know. I knew someone who, I bet you must get that.
Oh my goodness.
I knew someone who tried for years. And then suddenly, like, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And you go, well, that's nice for them. That's great. Oh, thanks for that.
It's the same people who go, I knew someone, they had cancer and they got better. You're like, great. Congratulations. Yeah. I'm really glad for them.
Yeah.
So pleased they're alive. It didn't happen that way. Yeah. To have that, like you said, that, to have to validate something, it must completely fuck up the grieving.
It does.
Not and fuck it up, but like yeah, make it hard.
It absolutely does. It can put people in such a state of shame.
Yeah.
The fact that they're grieving for something that everybody else around them doesn't think that they should be
yeah,
grieving for.
Yeah, you must
for.
Feel like it's bad enough for grief anyway. You feel like you're making a fuss.
Yeah.
And, you know, 20 years down the line, I feel like I'm making a fuss. And, you know, I got upset the other day about something and I thought, God, I can't believe I'm still this upset. And then it goes and you feel okay. Yeah. But I can't imagine, yeah, the shame you must then go, oh, this is so stupid. Why do I feel like this? They didn't matter. They were just, you know, but if it mattered to you, it mattered to you.
Absolutely.
That's the end of it.
So true. And I think that's why the charity became so huge, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people were using our words to express their pain. So they were all sharing our posts,
yeah,
etc.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't necessarily find the words. Because, as you know, British people in yeah. general are very crap when dealing with grief, and we're not taught the language of grief.
No.
We're taught the language of joy and how to express gratitude, etc. But when it comes to grief, we're just not taught that,
yeah.
the words surrounding it and how to express that pain. And then add on, when you do find the words, those around you tell you to stop talking
yeah,
about it and get
yeah.
over it and move on, and aren't you over it yet? And as soon as you get that on top of not knowing the language, that's where you become locked away and not feeling you're able to process through it. And you've got to be able to talk about it. That's how the grief actually gets processed. It's mm. how the brain comes to terms with
yeah.
loss, is by conversation. It's by talking. It's by listening to things like this and going, right, I'm not alone. I'm not
yeah.
going mad. I'm not crazy. And as soon as we start that dialogue and open that platform, that's when suddenly people get freedom.
Yeah. And I have to say, doing this show, I can't believe how much I've processed myself,
mm-hmm.
my own grief, which I would have said 2 years ago, whatever it was, I would have been like, oh no, that's fine, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
And just, you have to talk a lot. I don't think people realise it. You've got to talk a lot.
Yeah.
There's hours and hours to process what someone meant to you, and whether they were, you know, 2 weeks in utero or 44,
like, yeah.
they can have meant something to you.
For sure. And having that validation is part of that, whether that be mm. through conversation or through the government. That's one of the
yes,
areas why
yeah.
I'm a government advisor, and I'm currently co-chairing the national review on this subject, on saying how can we better care across the NHS and beyond, and also looking at the new national loss certificate. We campaigned for this a few
oh, so
years
what's
ago
this?
Now.
Yeah, tell
yeah,
us about
so
this.
We brought a bill to the House of Lords with Baroness Floella Benjamin.
Oh, love that woman.
She is amazing.
She's amazing.
She is awesome.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so we're working with her through the House of Lords to bring in a new national loss certificate. That's for anybody who's lost a baby prior to 24 weeks, that they get a certificate. At the moment, you get nothing unless your baby's born after 24 weeks. Your
don't
baby,
get anything.
You don't get anything. There's no birth or death certificate. There's no stillbirth certificate, nothing. It's like the baby didn't exist at all.
That's really bizarre.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, nothing. And so we're
wow.
campaigning for that to happen. Separately from that, then I got appointed to co-chair this national review, which is then looking at bringing in a new national loss certificate. So I'm really hoping that we can make this happen
yeah.
really quickly. But that's part of validating
mm.
a parent's grief and saying their baby existed. So it's not almost a figment of their imagination.
Yeah.
And to just have a piece of paper that said, my baby existed, they died on that date, means a lot to parents when you're given nothing. There's nothing in your family tree. There's nothing at all. And this is the same if people have twins. The amount of people we support who have actually got to maybe 22, 23 weeks of pregnancy with twins, they sadly go into labour. One baby takes a breath, so they get given a stillbirth certificate because they breathed, and the other baby didn't take a breath, so they get nothing. So then they go down as a singleton child forevermore in the register. It's like the other baby didn't even exist. It's mad.
Sorry, that's absolutely mad. I don't know what to say. I'm so shocked.
Yeah, so they have to go to the registry office and register one baby. And the other baby doesn't even count because it didn't breathe.
That must be heartbreaking.
It is. And the amount of parents who say, I'd rather not register either of them.
No, they're fine. Don't make me do
this. But it's the law. You don't have a choice. So you have to register the one that took a breath. You have to. It's the law.
Wow.
But for parents, when you know that they grew together, they were there together.
Yeah, but they just were there. That's a fact. That's the fact. There were two lives in there.
But in terms of documentation, only one exists.
Wow. And then I suppose that sort of harbours again this sense of shame and guilt and secrecy, doesn't it? Because imagine if you're researching a family tree and you don't know, then it becomes like, why don't we know? What happened? Like, what is it no one wanted to talk about? Because that's when you don't talk about something, it's because there's something shameful about it rather than like, well, I wasn't given anything.
I know. That's right.
So after 24 weeks, do you get a stillbirth
certificate? So after 24 weeks, well, at any point, if your baby's born breathing, you get a birth and death certificate.
Right, okay.
So if they breathe even for a while, you get a birth and death certificate because they're classed as living.
Yeah.
If they are born still without breathing at all after 24 weeks, they get a stillbirth certificate. But anything before 24 weeks, unless they're born breathing, you get nothing.
Wow. That is, I mean, I know it's complicated. I get it. It's a complicated system. I get that it's not an easy system to make laws for. But that is tough.
So hard. It's so hard when all you want is a piece of paper to say my baby existed.
Yeah.
For their brothers and sisters as well, if you're blessed to have other children, you want to know that their sibling existed.
Yeah.
So our last baby we lost was our daughter's twin.
Wow.
So, but she doesn't exist at all on paper. She only exists on my medical records, not even on my husband's medical records.
So she was a twin and then she died.
So she was a twin, she died in utero, But because she wasn't born after 24 weeks, she doesn't get a stillbirth certificate because she wasn't born breathing. She doesn't get anything.
I suppose it comes from, I mean, laws are tricky. And when you're making law, it always feels like laws have been made by completely unemotionally.
Yeah. They want to just say, my baby existed and here's the piece of paper that even shows they were here at all.
Yeah.
Because whether they could be seen or not, they were growing. They still grace the earth and we should acknowledge them as such.
Yeah.
Just in England, it's tied to viability, the 24 week. In other countries, it's not. So it's a lower term than 24 weeks. But here in the UK is tied, and so that's been set at 24 weeks. It used to be a higher age and then it got reduced. So in time it might get reduced again because babies are surviving at a younger and younger gestation. But for parents, that is a big deal, that 24 week, because it means if you lose your baby at 23 weeks, you don't get the stillbirth certificate, which means you don't get any entitlement to anything. You don't get bereavement leave. You don't get maternity rights. So your baby could be 23 weeks and 5 days and you've just, in terms of the law, you can be made to go back to work the week after.
I mean,
it's insane, right?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. And again, that's what I mean. Like, I can see people going, well, how can we change? How can we be different? You're like, you're just going to have to accept that some people can't go back to work. Like, that's how it's going to have to be. That's how we are good people and we look after each other. And you know what? Some less money might get made that day, but that might be okay, guys. Sorry, I can't get on my liberal high horse. It's just so, I mean, so I guess what happened to you, did you feel like, after those five experiences, did you just think, oh my God, this has to change? Like, what made you go, I cannot believe how unsupported I've been, or that no one helped me, or that I don't have a certificate?
Yeah, well, we were told by our consultant, don't even go looking for support because there's nothing great out there.
Great, that's helpful.
Yeah, so that, but at least it meant we didn't go and get any bad support, I guess.
Yeah.
And we were really blessed in the fact that my mum's a therapist anyway.
Yep,
so she instantly came round and was out. shoulder to cry on. And me and my husband are soulmates, and that really helped. We were just able to really talk openly, meant we grieved at the same rate, which is really helpful, because around 70% of relationships break down after baby loss.
Wow.
It's one of the number one leading causes of marriage breakdown.
Oh my
so
gosh.
You're hearing all these stats all the time as well, which is very helpful when you're going through it.
Oh my God. Yeah, thanks, guys.
I know you're just like, okay, just give me some good news.
I mean, this is why I do this podcast. It's like, I just wanted something there that wasn't there when it happened to me. So I wonder if that's what happened. You just thought, well, I would have liked this. I would have liked a ceremony I could have gone to.
Absolutely. And that was the formation of why we started the charity for sure. So we were told there was no support out there, so we knew we wanted to do something. And as soon as our daughter, Bronte, was 6 months, that's when we said, right, what do we want it to look like? I'm a big believer in anything you go through can be turned around for the good. Not that there's a silver lining in everything, because I don't believe that, but I do believe the fact that when you've been through something, you're the best equipped at helping others. So I knew we wanted to do something. So we looked at all the things we needed. We knew we needed support. We knew we wanted a service to attend, because we didn't hold funerals for our children. And we regretted that. And we knew lots of other people would regret that. And so we wanted to offer people this safe place to come together and to be able to publicly mourn and grieve. Because if you don't have a funeral, that can really hamper the grieving process, because actually this ritualistic ceremony plays a crucial part in helping us grieve, because it says you're not alone. It says this person mattered. And so we wanted to give every parent that opportunity to say, my baby mattered, and this is their funeral, if you like, or if they've had a funeral, this is my time to remember them. And that was why we picked cathedrals, because they're beautiful, royal, majestic buildings that said these babies are so important. Normally royal events and big state events happen in cathedrals, and we said that's what your baby deserves. So that's why we picked the cathedrals. But also we do national befriending, so we connect people with people who have been through the same thing. We offer resources, we do campaigning, and they were a gradual progression. So we started offering a few things, and then it grew and grew and grew. Campaigning was never meant to be part of what we did, to be fair, but quickly, within weeks of launching, we realised that a lot of the trauma people were going through could actually be prevented by having better care, by having acknowledgement, by giving them a platform to talk. And so we realised campaigning needed to become a fundamental thing that we did do, so we could change some of the atrocities that were happening in the care system.
Well, it's just incredible. Like, I think, hats off to you. Because I do, think after suffering, you know, 5 of those losses, I think a lot of people would just felt like, fuck it, you know, I don't want to talk about it, I've had enough, I just want to go into a cave. And I think to turn that into something positive is, like, takes a lot of strength. It takes a lot of strength. And it must be hard, you know, when people come to you with their story, to not get back into your own sometimes. I definitely have that. Like, oh.
Shall I say that's where being a trained counsellor really helps?
See, I've got no training, Zoe. No training.
That's where it helps, because you're taught not to put yourself into their shoes. And that's one of the key things through training in therapy, that you're taught that if whatever story you hear, don't put yourself in their shoes, because you're not in their shoes, even if they're going through exactly the same thing.
I definitely need that advice. Thank you.
So I never say, what if that was me? Oh my goodness, how would I cope? Because that's not me, that's them. They didn't have to walk in my shoes, I don't have to walk in theirs. So my job is to empathize with them and support them, but not to carry their pain, because that's their pain to carry.
It's almost like you were the perfect person to do that job.
Well, I always say that my life makes perfect sense in reverse. It's all of these jigsaw pieces that when I was doing it, I thought I was doing it for fun. Actually, it's now a fundamental part of everything I do, that training and helping people. But I didn't do it for that reason initially. I did it because I knew I was going to be good at it, because my mum was good at it. I'd seen her do it, and I knew I had the same skills as her. But yeah, it really helps, where I'm speaking to obviously hundreds of people a day who have gone through baby loss. And if I couldn't stand back and support with an empathetic hand rather than putting myself into their shoes, I would not be able to do this every single day, day after day, without burning out.
Yeah. Well, that was some good training for me. Yeah. There, so that's good because I've didn't do the counselling training.
But it's a hard skill to learn, and it's only something you can get, I think, through training. It's not something you'd automatically do, because it's, especially if you're a really compassionate, empathetic person, it's very hard not to think, oh my goodness, that's awful. How would I cope with that situation?
When you said that, I was like, oh, that's interesting, because like, my job as an actor is to think, what would I do?
Yes.
Like, so I was like...
And it's the exact opposite.
Yeah, it's like, as an actor, your entire training and job is to go, how would I feel if that happened to me? What would my face do?
Yeah.
I would do this. So I was like, oh, there you go, that explains it.
Yeah, it's the flip side of
I've been trained the other way. So the Mariposa Trust is the main thing, and then there's saying goodbye. If people want to help you, how can they do that?
Just get in touch with us, for sure. We're always looking for befrienders, fundraisers, and people to get involved who just want to add their voice to this big issue. Because the more people that talk about it, not only are we better equipped then to help people, because we'll never have enough people to work on team. We've got hundreds of people that work with us, but actually we could do with thousands of people who work with us. But also it's about awareness. It's about, you don't have to volunteer your time if you haven't got any. If you can afford a few pounds a week to donate, as all charities,
five,
we're always
ten,
looking for that.
Yeah, 20, whatever you've
absolutely
got, guys.
Absolutely, it's all great. However, if you are only able to share our posts, to share our work, to talk about what we're doing with anybody you know who's going through loss, that's all good, because what we want is people to know they're not alone. And we want people not to need to hit Google, I think it's really easy now, isn't it, to say, well, people can just go and do the research and find out. But actually, when you're in the depth of grief, the last thing you want to do is go searching for help. You want to know what help is available and it be offered on a plate, because it's hard enough without having to go and find great support and great systems. And that's why I wrote my book. And my next book comes out soon, just because I needed something that gave me all the answers in one place and I couldn't find it.
Yeah, and also we had the amazing Lou Conran on the show.
Who fundraises and works with us,
Yeah, whose episode, if you haven't listened to, and is also about baby loss. And she speaks about it just with such honesty and humour and is amazing. But you know, that was when I first became aware of saying goodbye. And I think it's so... this is the thing. If you don't talk about it, you don't know. And a funny thing happened that someone contacted me about one of their friends and they were like, she's just lost a baby. Like, what do I do? And I was able to go, oh, saying goodbye.
Yeah.
Saying goodbye because I'd spoken to Lou.
Yeah.
Whereas prior to that, I didn't have a clue. If you came to me for bereavement, I was like, I know the children ones, I know the teenage ones. And I thought, wow, that's amazing that I am able to go, and you know, and immediately she went to saying goodbye. And again, she was very like, oh, it's early, I'm embarrassed, I shouldn't need anything. But, you know, and it, you know, you guys were very helpful and offered the support she needed. And I think, it doesn't have to be like 8 years of counselling. Just to know there's a charity out there, you can read some stuff online and you can go, oh, I see, okay, what I'm feeling is kind of
And that's
normal.
Really empowering for someone supporting as well, because I think a lot of the fear of people bringing these subjects to our table is we don't know how to make them better.
Yeah.
And as we've discussed, you can't make them better. But actually, if you just know where to guide people, that actually makes you less fearful than talking about the subjects. You can go, right, well, if someone talks to me about baby loss, I know where to shepherd them.
Yeah.
So I don't need to be scared of it, because I can say, have you heard about this? Sometimes we just need those keys to be able to hand to people.
Definitely. And that's what happened in this situation. I think everyone was like, phew,
yeah,
we can say go here. And what advice would you give to somebody, I think, because if somebody's going through it, they just need to talk to you. Mm-hmm. But for a friend who knows someone, like, what advice would you say? Like,
to keep talking, to keep the conversation open, and don't be afraid to keep asking them how they are and mentioning the situation by name. If they've named their baby, talk about their baby.
Yeah.
If they haven't, say, how are you going since you lost? Don't be afraid. I think so many people are scared of re-traumatising people and raising the subject that they don't go near it at all. And that makes other people then think, well, they're thinking I've moved on. And so I shouldn't raise it with them. And actually, we need to just keep the conversation open and also really listen as well. You don't need to have all of the answers. Just by saying, I'm always going to sit here, I'm always going to sit here with a box of tissues, just come. You can tell me your story over and over again. If it's thousands of times, I'll sit here and listen. And just having somebody open up that space to do that makes the world of difference. I'll never forget one of my worst moments was after we'd lost Darcy and our first outing from the house was a friend's funeral.
Oh,
and that I know. And they were, think royal level, because they are kind of connected to that family. And the lady had lost her husband and she hadn't got daughters and she treated me like her daughter. So she wanted to take me around and introduce me to all of these people, very posh people in this room. And we were going from person to person. She was going, let me introduce you to Zoe. And I was feeling very vulnerable, very raw, because I hadn't been out since losing Darcy. And then I got that question, that horrible question that every bereaved parent hates. Have you got any children? And I stood there and I didn't know what to say, because I hadn't been in that environment before of being asked such a question in sort of a public place.
Yeah.
I didn't want to deny I'd just lost her, and she was obviously our second loss. I didn't want to say, yeah, I've just had a baby. So I was going through all of these things in my head. And then I thought, I can't deny I've just lost her. I just can't. And so I said, oh, I've just lost my little girl. And the person didn't hear me.
Oh, no.
I know. You know where this is heading. And so she went, you've just had a daughter. Congratulations. And said it so loud, the whole room became silent. And one by one, everyone screamed congratulations at me. Congratulations. Congratulations.
Like, this is the worst thing.
I know, right?
Zoe.
From every part of the room, they were screaming congratulations. And so I just had to stand there and just went, she died. Because I just didn't know what to do. So then the whole room went silent. And then I spent the whole afternoon going round every single person at the funeral going, it's okay, don't worry, it's okay, I'll be okay, I'll survive this, it's okay, reassuring them. And I think...
I'm covering my face as I do in these awful... Well, I just can't...
You couldn't make it, right?
I'm putting myself in your shoes. I can't help it, Zoe. I'm just thinking that is just so bad.
It's so mortifying. But part
of
that...
And they must have been mortified. You're mortified. Everybody's mortified. There's nothing... No fun here.
There's no way of rescuing
the
situation.
You're already at a funeral anyway.
I know.
Oh,
and
God.
It's meant to be all about him.
Yeah.
The person who died... And yet I'm then reassuring everybody.
Yeah.
And I think that's just so classically British, isn't
it?
The fact that we go around making sure everyone feels okay.
Oh, don't worry. No, it's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. No,
I'm
it's
great.
My fault. I shouldn't have said it.
I should have denied she existed.
I should have denied it, I should have just not brought it up. Can't believe I did. I know, it's so hard.
And then you just feel this horrible burden to make everyone feel better.
Yeah.
So I think if we can actually, when we're supporting those, reassure them the fact that they don't need to make us feel better.
Yeah.
The fact that it's okay. You just tell me how you're feeling. And even if that makes me cry, you don't need to rescue me, because I will deal with that, because you're the one in pain right now.
Yeah.
You're the one suffering right now. And I think sometimes if we make that really clear, that almost takes away some of the fear on our shoulders as well. Because the amount of people who ask me weekly, what should I say?
Yeah,
how can I say it? I'm so scared of getting upset that I don't want to even broach the subject with them, because what if I make them more upset by showing my emotion? You won't make them more upset. They're already feeling that pain. All they're going to feel is, okay, they get it. Or they really feel it with me. And you're going to release them to cry. And as long as they don't feel they need to rescue you from your pain.
As you say, remember, you're the supporting actor. You're not the lead.
Yeah.
It's the Oscars, baby. So you just need to take your, not every scene is going to be about you.
Absolutely.
So as long as your tears don't overtake the lead actress, you're fine.
You're all good.
Yeah.
And you just need to say, you don't need to make me feel better. I'm here to make you feel better. And even if I cry, that's okay.
Yeah.
Don't feel guilty. Just carry on sharing.
Yeah.
Because we just need that freedom, because it can hurt to hear these stories. And sometimes they're deeply traumatic. Sometimes they're scary. Sometimes you can't help but go there in your own head and then go to a dark place. And that's okay. And I'd always say, don't be so afraid of messing up what you're going to say that you don't show up at all.
Yeah.
Just show up.
Just
be real. If you're nervous, say, I'm scared that I might burst into tears. So if I do, please know it's just because I love you. I care for you. I'm over-empathizing with you. But you don't need to make me feel better. I'm here to make you feel better. And any bereaved person will go, that's fine. That's great. Thank you for being willing to sit there.
I think it's so important, and again, I think this comes from like this language we don't have, to just say, I'm to say what's actually happening.
Yeah.
I think we feel we have to come in with this you know, the Oscar-worthy sentence.
Yeah.
This is the greatest thing you've ever heard about baby loss. Rather than going, I'm really worried I'm going to fuck this up. Yeah. I don't, and saying, I don't know what to say. So then someone can go, oh, I don't think there is anything to say. And you go, oh, okay. Like, if you just start from a place of honesty.
Yeah.
And we've said this on the show so many times, not even about baby loss, but obviously it completely, it affects the same situation of, you can't make it worse. It is already the worst.
It's already as crap as it's going to get.
So you saying the wrong thing might upset them, but the reason, if they, you know, and I've seen this when people are like, oh, so-and-so said this and that upset me. Like, no, you upset your dad died. You upset your baby died. That's mm-hmm. what is upset. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, maybe someone said the wrong thing and then you can blame them. But really, you're not, they didn't make it worse.
No.
You're just upset.
Yeah, it's just all utterly crap.
Yeah.
But there's also, I'd always say to everybody, also seek out any of the beautiful moments as well.
Yeah.
So if somebody's had a stillbirth, for instance, ask them about the birth.
Yeah.
Ask them about those beautiful moments. Say, what was it like holding your daughter for the first time?
Yeah.
What was it like holding their hand? All of these things, because often when you've lost a baby, people don't want to even talk about the happy points,
yeah,
the beautiful moments.
Painful,
it's
yeah.
too painful. And so they only look at the trauma and the pain, but actually there's so much beauty in there.
Yeah, yeah.
I love talking about all of those months that I was pregnant with the babies I lost, because they were beautiful moments. There were moments of celebration and joy where I was so excited for the future. And just because I lost those babies doesn't negate all that beauty.
Yeah.
It doesn't remove it. And I still want to talk about my pregnancy. I still want to talk about those moments after delivery. And I still want to talk about the love I have for those babies, even though they're no longer here.
Mm.
And I think it's really easy to just go, all baby loss is just pain. It's just all grief.
Yeah,
it's all
yeah.
just trauma. But actually, it's not. You might not have all of those memories, for instance, if you've lost a parent or a grandparent, etc., where you've got lots of happy moments to talk about. And do you remember this birthday? And do you remember
yeah,
that holiday?
Yeah.
You're sort of robbed of all those experiences when you lose at birth or pre-birth. However, there's still lots of beauty there, and there's still the scans, there's still the joyous moments. And so I'd always say, look for those, seek for those as well, and don't just write it all off as a painful experience.
I think that's an incredible thing to remember, mm-hmm. definitely, because I think when things seem so tragic, if you haven't experienced, you do just think, oh, well, there can be
yeah.
no good here. And so I'm just not going to ask, I'm not going to say, because obviously it's the worst thing that ever happened to them.
Yeah.
So let's hope they never talk about it, because
yeah.
they probably never want to remember it. But actually, you're so right to remember holding a baby or seeing them or holding their hand and being allowed to share that.
Or feeling those kicks or feeling that.
Yeah.
Or what the most exciting feelings when you found out you were pregnant. Tell me about that
yeah.
day. What was that like? And initially, people might not be ready to look at that, because that can take a little time for you to even be able to do that. Because as you know, when you go into the fog of grief,
oh,
you
yeah.
can't really talk about anything initially.
No.
You're lucky if you can put a sentence together. So this is a bit down the line, but it's so important to remember that. I don't talk about all of my baby losses as trauma.
Mm.
I talk about them as beauty. I mean, I'm just so glad my babies existed, my
yeah.
five children. They might not be here, but they changed me. They made me appreciate life. They made me love the world so much more. And I want to talk about those things as well, not just about them being losses, because they're my children and I want them to have a beautiful legacy, not just one of tears. I want to be able to smile about them when I talk about them, not just cry.
I think you should be allowed that.
Yeah.
So what were those five babies' names? I should have asked you that earlier.
My babies' names were Kobe, Bailey, I know.
Lovely names.
Darcy, Samuel and Isabella.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, for all of those wonderful, wonderful babies and you, thank you, Zoe.
Thank you.
And if people want to get in touch with Saying Goodbye.
Yeah, just head to the website, sayinggoodbye.org, and you can find me on Instagram under Zoe Adele and on Twitter as well. If people need any sort of support, you can just reach out.
Thank you.
Those details again, you can head to sayinggoodbye.org for details on the charity. Zoe's new book is called The Baby Loss Guide and it's out now. You can follow her on Twitter at Clark Coates, that's C-O-A-T-E-S, and on Instagram at Zoe Adele, which is Zoe A-D-E-L-L-E. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at The Griefcast. The show was edited by Kate Holland, with thanks to Whistledown Studios, and the music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. And remember, you are not alone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.